It's time for Sound Mind with life coach and counselor Daniel Pryor. For more information about Daniel Pryor and his services, visit BibleBasedCounselor.com. Daniel has offices in Bellevue and Edmonds. And now your host, Daniel Pryor.
And sitting in on this conversation as well, Mark Holland. Glad to be with Daniel Pryor today. Hello, Mr. Pryor.
Hello, Mark. How are you?
Really good. Hey, I love the music you chose for this program. Been on a little while here. This is a little bit of Phil Keaggy.
It is Phil Keaggy. That's a nice passing thought, and I thought that was good for our show, too.
Perfect passing thought. Well, today we're going to hear your thoughts about what this week?
Yeah, I thought we'd talk about grieving. That's something, you know, because we're trying to get the sun to shine and then people looking forward to summer. It's going to be good. I've got this bright sweater on today.
Yeah,
people can't
see.
I'm trying to do my part. But at the same time, there's loss, and we always have loss. And there's people who are, regardless of the time of year, there are people who are going through difficult times. And so I wanted to kind of talk about that, the process of grieving and really what grief and grieving are, because after being in the counseling business for a while, there are these certain buzzwords, and boundaries and is a buzzword. And another buzzword is grief and grieving. And
are those different, grief and grieving?
Well, of course, grief is what we carry, and grieving is the process of working through it. And I always try to get the cliche and the name out of the way, and try to see, you know, what's actually behind it, what's being done, because I feel like that's if I can make it more practical for myself and more practical for people. A lot of times the word grief and grieving, the grieving process, and if anybody's familiar with that, they realize that there is this process. It's sort of like a 7-step thing that I think was, as you were saying earlier, associated probably primarily with the loss, involving death, the death of a loved one. But it's been kind of generalized to the grief of lots of different kinds of things. And actually, fairly so, because we're always grieving something. As I was thinking about grieving over the years, and it's kind of, as children go through school and they graduate a class and move on to different friends, it's constantly a story of loss. I mean, we're changing. Life is changing, but we're always losing something. I was watching as my daughter kind of grew up and beginning to realize that how, as she grows, she's every day leaving something behind as a growing person. Language changes, relationships changes, responsibilities change, and it's always a story of leaving things behind. And so we don't think of that as a grief process, but it is actually the very same process that we have when we lose a loved one. And so just understanding how the practical part of that. Grief is what we have, and grieving is the process of that. And so it might be interesting to kick around a little bit of the parts of that, because it's actually a kind of a complex situation. You've got grief. There's a neurological state, which is the grief state.
So there's actual chemistry involved in
right?
grief.
Certain neurotransmitters that are it's our mind's way of protecting the body. That's really what our mind is all about. Protect the body, protect the body. That's why the anatomic nervous system is all about, you know, those heart rate, breathing, respiratory patterns, and those kinds of things. It's all about keeping the body alive. And that's what our brain is about. So when we are in a threatening environment, we feel threatened, the brain sends a signal, protect yourself. And one of the ways it does that, of course, is the fight and flight. You know, so it pumps adrenaline and things into there. And then they're like, they've identified something like 60 different chemicals in the body.
Well, I hear one called dopamine a lot. Is that involved in this? Or is that that's the pleasurable one, right?
Well, neurotransmitters act in balance. So the dopamine is the one we associate mostly with feeling good. And then adrenaline is fight and flight. And, there are some neurotransmitters that are sort of like, I like to think of serotonin, for example, as sort of the molasses neurotransmitter. It's one of those that helps us sustain certain moods. But there are a number that have similar overlapping roles that they play. But basically, these neurotransmitters go through and they either excite tissue or they inhibit the excitement of tissue. And that's so our body's making it an exciting tissue. the body can get tense and all that. But so there's a neurological brain function that we call grief, and that's something that you could see the rise in heart rate and different.
Or, and you could take a brain scan and see something.
Yeah, you could see grief in that.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's the mind, which is this other part of grief. And then the interesting thing is that those talk to each other. And it's sort of like a chicken and an egg kind of situation, because,
right.
you know, a neurological, certain neurological balance or imbalance can signal my mind that something's wrong. I don't feel good. And then my mind can send a message back to the brain saying, yeah, I really don't feel good. And then that will exacerbate the brain's activity. And then you kind of like in a circle. And where do you break the circle? Well, if you can take medication and interrupt the neurological transmission.
Which seems to be kind of the go-to method in so much.
That's the go-to method.
Yeah. And, but you're not necessarily a believer in that.
I like to see, Mark, so many of the people that I see, I can explain their emotional situation and the process of getting out of that in natural terms. And I think that that's where we want to go first. And I say to people, worry, you know, if there's something to worry about, we should worry. I don't want to be medicated or see someone medicated at a place where they don't worry or they don't feel the pain. We should feel the pain. We should worry because if there are things to worry about. And a lot of times people want to be medicated to the point where they don't feel the pain. The problem is that if we don't feel the pain, we're not inclined to fix the problem.
Right.
So there's a process that we can go through. And I'm not saying that people should never take medication. I'm not a medication guy. But there are examples or circumstances where people are so overwhelmed that the body can even shut down, and we want to keep that from happening. But those are rare.
Yeah,
those are rare. Usually, if people have the tools and they can see the logic of what they need to do to get out of this or to move through the grieving process. That's a lot better way to do it.
Yeah, well, so through just rational choices and activities, mm-hmm. you can kind of change your chemistry, change your neurology.
Yeah, because the brain responds to the mind. Now, the mind is where we have the story of life. Mm-hmm. The mind is where we have the story of the meaning of life. What did it mean that I lost my dog? Or what did it mean that nobody showed up on my birthday? You know, what was the meaning of that? You know, my brain doesn't know. Brain doesn't have a story. It's just kind of sort of going, sometimes the brain responds very quickly in the mind. We don't see our mind get involved like a loud noise. Our brain will respond to a loud noise. The mind is really involved, but we don't see it. It's just like just a flash, because certainly there has to be a story about the loud noise, because
mm-hmm.
a loud noise on its own. So the story can be a short story. I hear a loud noise, and the story could be as short as, that's not good, you know, just a flash thought. But it has in the mind, and then the body can respond. The body can respond to that. Sometimes the story is extremely short. If you hit your thumb with a hammer, there's a very short story that goes with that. The pain is instant, and the body just responds to the pain.
Right.
Okay, so there are times when it's almost as though the story doesn't get involved. But when we're talking about the grieving process, there's always a story involved. There's always a way to look at the loss. So our mind is where we have this story of life, and in our mind is that, you know, the story also involves the fact of the element of our mortality, you know. And so when a loved one passes, you know, it really brings us face to face with that whole thing of mortality. And there's a story involved with that. And for some people, the story doesn't end well. For Christians, for believers, the story can end well. You know, we can say, well, it doesn't really end, it begins. You know, this is the beginning of. So there's a way that our mind can, because of the story that we tell about the loss, our brain is going—it's going to be affected in the way that it responds. So if the story is hopelessness and helplessness, then the brain will respond, you know, accordingly.
Mm-hmm.
And so it can be kind of a circular thing. So this increase in the neurotransmission, all having to do with protection and the body. Getting in protection mode.
Well, it was interesting, too, before we started our program today, you were mentioning how some of these steps, mm-hmm. the people like their lists, mm-hmm. and these steps having to do with more grief about death, are useful in talking about grief for all kinds of things. And you wanted to kind of start getting into these and kind of giving your take on some of these. Because
yeah,
people come to you and they go, how do you handle grief? Can you help me with grief? And they mention this and
yeah,
you
they'll
kind
mention
of want to qualify.
The list. They'll mention the list and people use the list as a list. And I've heard people counseling or grief recovery programs that I've kind of been involved with and where I've sort of moderated grief groups, and people would say things like, "Well, I'm down to number three, or I'm at number three, but I keep mm-hmm. having to go back to number two, you know,
right.
or I'm almost through, I'm on six, I'm having trouble getting through, you know, to seven."
As if this is a list you complete or something.
As if it's a list, yeah. And so what we need to understand is that that's not the way it works.
Mm-hmm.
Somebody separated these things out and sort of gave names to these, but this is not everybody's experience. And people say if you were to look down this list, so let me just go over them quickly. There's shock and denial, that's number one. Pain and guilt, you know, feeling like, you know, could I have done something different? You know, anger and bargaining, you know, somebody was at fault. A lot of times if there's a death, it was like a doctor could have done more or someone should have visited more or something like that.
Right.
Reflection and loneliness, and they say depression, reflection, at least, is probably more like anxiety, reflection and loneliness. And then there's an upward turn. So they start to see life differently and maybe see some hope there. And then there's like reconstruction working through. And then finally, hope and acceptance. And so people look at that list of those seven things. And by the way, you could, if you're interested in that, you could Google steps of grieving, and you would get mm-hmm. these seven steps.
Mm-hmm.
But the thing is that they're not really everyone's experience. And we cycle through them again and again, and we kind of jump from one to the other. And that has to do with that story we were talking about in your mind. In the narrative of the story, the mind has to go back and do things over or do. And here's another thing in this process. What we're really doing under all this grieving, if you look at these steps and consider what's going on here, what we're really, and the fact that grieving has under this, there's this underlying idea of our mortality and just feeling kind of that threat and things beyond our control. What's really going on with grieving is there's the mind, because of its story, has a question to ask. And the question is, what did I lose and what do I get to keep? What did I really lose and what do I get to keep? Which is another way of saying, who am I now? After this loss, now who am I? And so the brain is taking, and the mind is taking inventory of kind of the narrative, the story, and saying, well, now how does that change the narrative? What did I lose and what do I get to keep? And you can see how that answer to that question will change almost every day, because things will come into my life which will give me the sense of number of ways, I guess I didn't lose as much as I thought I did, or I guess I get to keep more than I thought that I could keep, or something could happen that, you know, make me feel that I lost actually more than I lost.
Mm-hmm.
I've had a situation lately where there's a person who lost a loved one. At the same time she lost a loved one, her career started to change, and there was like more and more tension at work. And so she's really got a couple things going on. And the answer to the question, what did I lose, what are we going to keep, is she lost this person who was very supportive, but in a lot of different areas. And without this person in her life now, these other areas are beginning to intensify. So the answer to the question would be, I lost quite a lot. You know, sometimes you might feel like I lost everything. But if things were to change at her job, or even if she decided to retire and go traveling, which she could afford to do, even if she decided to do that, the answer to the question, what do I lose and what do I get to keep? You know, she'd find that, for example, there's parts of that loved one that she actually gets to take with her on the trip, because what we call me is really a composite of things that a lot of people have put into me and my relationship with people. And a lot of what this person, what this woman sees as herself, is coming from that man who was very significant in her becoming, you know, who she is. So she gets to take that with her on the trip. And so there's a way of looking, that could be a way of looking that changes that. But when she comes back off the trip, or then her mind will again revisit, what did I lose and what do I get to keep? And this is a process that will go on for the rest of her life. And so in that sense, the what we call the grieving process, which is just that simple way that the mind's taking inventory, what did I lose and what am I going to keep, continues to change. And we actually can have a role in that, a positive, objective, intentional role in that by, as we were talking on a previous show, moving forward in life, that is enlarging my world, being involved in relationships and goal setting to...
Well, this is really a refreshing approach to grief and grieving. If this is maybe something you're going through, you're listening to Daniel Pryor today discuss this process. You help people get the right perspective on this, and it's a very interesting approach to grief and grieving. Talking today with Daniel Pryor, counselor and life coach. And you have a great website, BibleBasedCounselor.com. You have offices in Edmonds and Bellevue. And your phone number, Daniel?
425-778-6169.
We are going to take a quick break here, get more into this list and Daniel's take on how to maybe use this list more productively in your life as you go through grief and grieving when we come back with more of Sound Mind here on KCIS.
Hi, this is Daniel Pryor, counselor and life coach. You know, anxiety and depression contribute to every type of psychosis, behavioral problem, and even many health issues. Unchecked, they can ruin your life. But you don't have to let that happen. If you feel that you or someone that you know is struggling with anxiety and depression, call me and let me teach you the tools to build, manage, and maintain a more wholesome lifestyle. Contact me through my website at BibleBasedCounselor.com or call me at 425-778-6169.
Sound Mind with life coach and counselor Daniel Pryor. And now your host, Daniel Pryor.
Mark Holland sitting in on this session as well with Daniel Pryor. I do feel like that, Daniel. Sometimes it is kind of a counseling session that I'm
for
getting.
Me too. Hey.
And hit people listening to this. If you are interested in the thoughts and the kind of the approach to biblical counseling that Daniel takes, BibleBasedCounselor.com is his website, and he has offices in Edmonds and Bellevue. And we were discussing before the break the subject of grief and grieving, and we were going to come back. You're going to kind of hash out these steps, the official steps of grief and grieving, and maybe how we can apply those more realistically to grief and grieving.
Yeah. Now, let me comment just before I jump into that list, Mark. I was, as you were introducing just now, I was reminded again that of the Bible-based counseling aspect, and most of my clients come because they've either heard me on the radio or a pastor has said, I know this person. Because I have, in past years, I've had a mailer that has gone out to hundreds of pastors, and so I kind of got to know people that way. And with grief and grieving, and, you know, of course, the Psalms are one of the places that I like to direct people.
Absolutely.
You know, David in his life went through some horrendous things of, you know, sibling or children turning against him and, you know, all kinds of things that we go through today.
The complete range of emotions are in the Psalms.
And you see a lot of times in the Psalms, some that I'm thinking of here, where he would start off, you know, oh, my soul, why are you troubled within me? Hope, and then he turns, hope thou in God. And then the rest of the Psalm is like, an encouragement of he's being encouraged in the Lord, and I've heard that phrase that David encouraged himself in the Lord. So we were talking before the break about the story in your mind, and part of the changing of that story for Christians is that kind of that wonderful opportunity that we have and gift that we have of being able to realize that there's a, you know, there's a greater good, that there's a heavenly Father that's involved in this process, and that he's walking through us with it. You know, he's the God that suffers. He's not just feeling good while we're
above it all
in the trenches. Yeah. You know, he walks with us through this. So a lot of times changing the story just means, you know, what did I lose? What do I get to keep? Part of that healing and that, or part of that moving forward has to be, you know, encouraging our hearts in the Lord and saying, you know, we get to keep the Lord. He's been through that. He's coming through that. We're bringing us through this. He goes through it with us, and he's going to help us make sense out of it. So to the list, if we just go through the list, and then I would like for, you know, people just, to have the opportunity of kind of hearing the list if they haven't, or thinking their way through it. I mean, maybe there's some people out there right now who are going through grieving. They've got the list in front of them, or they've got the list in their head. And so I just want to reflect on how this, if we go through each one of these seven steps, how it actually is a our brain, mind's way of asking, what did I lose and what are we going to keep?
Okay.
So there's, first of all, they list shock and denial. And that is, of course, at that point, if it's really shock and denial, our mind is just, the question is, what did I lose and what do I get to keep? But our response to it is one of, we're just numb. And obviously that has to pass. And that usually, in my mind, I'm thinking of a loss involving death or something like that. But even in lesser, if the trauma is less, then that shock and denial period is going to be a lot less. If I lose a job, if I'm fired from a job, or I get laid off from a job, and that's happening nowadays, certainly, and it can come as quite a surprise, loss.
Can people stay stuck in shock and denial for a long time? I would think that that's kind of what earmarks the initial traumatic event, or can people stay in that?
I don't think they stay there. I think we're moved beyond there. There's a part where the story, by necessity, the story has to change and move on. Well, take for example the loss of a job. There might be a period of time where a person is saying, oh, that couldn't have happened. How did that happen? I didn't do anything wrong. What there's got to be a way that, or this can't be my life. I can't believe this is happening to me. But pretty quickly, the reality will set in that, now what do I do? Now what do I do? And that's already kind of we're already moving past the shock and denial. I think the shock and denial, again, depending upon the trauma and how it happened. For example, for myself, when I hear about, some of these tragedies involving airliners where it's, I think my way through that, sort of imagining what that might be like. And I would imagine that the shock and denial of something like that happening in your family or in your life would be something that could hang on for a while. But if we look at what did I lose and what do I get to keep, you can sort of see how that, even that shock and the denial, a denial is, in a way, it's a narrative of its own. So that narrative can change, and you can see how that narrative could change if someone were either encouraged in some ways, were forced to think differently, but encouraged to think differently about the loss and the reality of the loss and how those losses happen and how we can't avoid those things. And so, the story can begin to change in a way that kind of encourages us to move forward through these.
Do the steps kind of follow in order, do you think?
Well,
number two would be pain and guilt.
I'm not sure that they do I'm not sure that they do for everyone. Mm-hmm. And if they do follow in order, we shouldn't get hung up on, I'm angry and I'm bargaining, but I haven't felt the pain and the guilt yet. I've got them out of sequence. We shouldn't, it has to do with the story, the narrative, and how the narrative in our mind is told about what we lost and what do we get to keep. That determines where we are and how we feel, and if there are seven steps or 14 steps. Then pain and guilt, that's certainly a story. How much was I responsible? That's obviously connected with the narrative. And a lot of times I'll tell people with guilt, guilt's not always legitimate, and a lot of times it's not. And of course, the feeling of guilt is shame, and shame has neurological repercussions to it, too. So we need to go back into guilt, and we can actually go back in that and change the narrative in an intentional sort of way, by either with the help from someone else or on our own, looking and saying, well, hold it. What is there to be guilty about, really? And I talk to people all the time who look back on something, whether it's the marriage is broken up or there's been a loss, and they'll have these ideas of, I could have done something, or I keep feeling that I could have done something. But when you go back and relook at it and say, In fact, you did all you could.
Yeah, a lot of false guilt.
Yeah. Then anger and bargaining. And
I just heard of bargaining is kind of also bargaining with God, mm-hmm. with the cosmic universe. You say, "Why me, Lord?" You know, that kind of.
Yeah.
Well, if you'll just change this, I can do this. Yeah. You know, or
and it's probably that after the fact, in the loss of someone, there's not a lot of bargaining that can be done. But the bargaining would have to do more with guilt. If I had done this, would it have been different?
Right.
That sort of thing. And again, that's a part of the narrative. What did I lose and what do I get to keep? You can just, if you give thought to it, you can see how that is actually what's going on here. Reflection and loneliness, certainly that's
going to happen if you lose a loved one, back mm-hmm. to just plain loss of a person through death.
Yeah. And again, it's so clear that, you know, that question, what did I lose and what did I get to keep? And, you know, then it turns around. The next five or the next three are, you know, the upward turn, reconstruction, working through, and acceptance and hope. And it's easy to see with those. You can apply that very quickly and easily. So I think that's what we want people to take out of this show is that grieving is a process, but it's not something that you're trying to get through emotions. Your mind and your brain are working together to try to answer the question, you know, what did I lose and what do I get to keep? And that's something that's going to go on through your life, but it's going to change. The narrative's going to change. And that's what we call healing.
There you go. And a sound mind.
And a sound
mind. As the program is called. Well, this is a very different approach to grief and grieving with life coach and counselor Daniel Pryor today. Very interesting discussion. And if you or maybe someone you know of is going through grief and they just can't seem to get out of it, Daniel could probably help get them back on track. This, to me, is a lot of coaching. Interesting mm-hmm. how, you know, what did I lose? What do I get to keep? I think that's a real easy way to look at it and to get mm-hmm. people thinking about, okay, you lost this, but look at all these things you get to keep.
Mm-hmm.
The
mm-hmm.
memories for getting back to if you lost a loved one. Yeah. The wonderful relationship and get mm-hmm. people to focus on the positive, mm-hmm. you know, things that mm-hmm. Came from that situation. So life coach and counselor, Daniel Pryor, BibleBasedCounselor.com is your website. You have offices in
Bellevue and Edmonds.
Mm-hmm. And your phone number?
425-778-6169.
More details as well at KCISradio.com. This has been Sound Mind with life coach and counselor Daniel Pryor here on KCIS.
You've been listening to Sound Mind with life coach and counselor Daniel Pryor. For more information about Daniel Pryor and his services, visit BibleBasedCounselor.com. Daniel has offices in Bellevue and Edmonds. To make an appointment, call 425-778-6169. Be sure to tune in each Tuesday afternoon at 1 p.m. for Sound Mind with Daniel Pryor.